Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's a bit like the tires are dead radio calls of the past and then popping in a fastest lap. It's just this time the car's rubbish and then the next day just popping in pole position like it's said. It's what you would expect from Lewis Hamilton, the unexpected, and that's why we love watching him.
Another up-and-down weekend for Mercedes is over as the boys and girls from Brackley return from Budapest with a P4 and P6 for Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, respectively. And we're here to unpack the details and answer all the key questions, such as what did the trial qualifying format reveal about the W14's strengths and weaknesses? Where did it go wrong in the race for Lewis? And just how encouraging was George's race against the Aston Martins and Ferrari? Join me, Balv Baines, on this episode of the Silver Arrows podcast as we discuss all the main talking points from the Hungarian Grand Prix. And to help us do all of that, we have two of the podcast regulars in the form of F1 engineer Tom Fletcher and Formula One journo Adam Williams. Adam, hello to you. I was just double checking. You haven't fallen off any bikes in the last week or so, have you?
No, I haven't. However, I did return to the line bike scene in London and I did go out in the rain and I had slicks on. It was risky.
I found myself
debating with my friend what the intensity was, whether it's intensity 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 as McLaren Mercedes go into. But despite the occasional slide, I made it and I didn't fall off.
We're glad you're here, Adam. We're glad you're here, Adam. Thank you. Thankfully, you're safe and safe and sound. Tom, how are you?
Well, yeah, I'm the one who's managed to fall off a bike this week. I've got my ribs in, unfortunately.
Should I be worried if I'm next?
Yeah. But yeah, apart from that, it's good to be back.
Definitely good to be back. And we can't talk about anything else to start but Hamilton's amazing lap. Adam, where did that come from in quali? Pole 104 for Lewis Hamilton.
Well, Martin Brundle, who is my colleague, which is a bit of a flex, I know, he said that down to a bit of Lewis Hamilton magic, and I think it's clear to see that that was the case. He probably got a tenth or two more out of the Mercedes than he should have done. It was very close in qualifying between himself, Verstappen, Lando Norris, and also Oscar Piastri. So, yeah, he made the difference. I think he talked about how committed he was going through turn 4, which is a high-speed corner, and we know that the McLaren and Red Bull have really got an edge over the Mercedes there, so he had to get the cojones out and he did the job there. But it was so close. What was it? 0.003 of a second, something like that, between him and Verstappen. But that's the sort of thing that you get from Lewis Hamilton, as shown by the fact he's done it 103 times before. Amazing. I loved it. And I'm sure everyone else did too.
Yeah, it was an absolutely magic.
It definitely was an amazing thing. And it was just such a good qualifying. Tom, do you think Lewis outperformed the car in that sense?
Yes, I think he did. I think the lap itself was pure genius, particularly in the slow speed. So one thing he was doing, if you look at turn 1, for example, he was not taking effectively, not apexing the corner where the apex curb is. So he's leaving a good 2 or 3 meters to the apex. And what that is doing is effectively allowing the car to travel faster through the corner because Aegis is larger. And then that's then charging the aero surfaces, so you can run a bit more downforce through the corner. So yeah, turn one was a good example of that. He was getting an absolutely amazing drive turn one. Really. I never thought I'd say that from Mercedes, to be honest. They always seem to struggle on traction. But yeah, great drive from turn one. The slowest of the car is really, really great, and also the slower the run in the slower speeds and medium speeds as well. It seems to be quite good. So part of that's the car, yep. But like Adam said, turn four, he was 8K faster than his lap before through turn four, which is huge. Really, 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 really fast in comparison. So I don't know whether, you know, it's the car's capable of doing that. Maybe it's just it's in the feeling and not feeling entirely comfortable at that high speed. Because it's certainly to go 8K quicker is really something special, and keep it within track limits as well. So yeah, really great. Slightly better through turn 10 as well, another high speed corner and just carrying more speed. But then the really interesting bit where the car was so great is turn 13 and 14. It's very similar actually to Brooklands and Loughfield at Silverstone. The sort of higher end of the speed to medium speed, long radius corners, one then the other. And it's something that Mercedes are starting to look really good at in combined loads. So braking whilst turning and keeping the car stable on the entry. It just seems to be so much better than any other car at the moment in the initial turn in to the apex. That all coming together. There was a slight mistake in turn 14. He lost, I think, about 10th on his previous lap. There was a big snap on the way in, just carrying a little bit too much speed, but he managed to style it out and only lose, a 10th. So, yeah, he could have been even further down the road, but yeah, great performance. Mainly his input, I think. I don't think many other drivers would have got that much out of the car, particularly on a track like this that is so, you know, one corner affects the other. It's relentless corners all the way through. So, yeah, really impressive job. I'm really pleased for him.
I think also it was a do or die lap, like we say, Tom. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it also feels like Mercedes did what they always do, and they improved overnight between Friday and Saturday, because Lewis was in such a bad mood after practice. And I remember Martin Brundle standing trackside saying that the Mercedes looked the worst through the penultimate corner, and it ended up being one of the best. So they've obviously finessed the setup to a certain extent there. But yeah, they've really come alive overnight, if you like. And I know that Lewis said to Brazilian TV that he was up until 5 on over Friday night. So really putting in the hours, arguably too many hours, as he and the team looked to find those incremental gains that obviously added up into another pole position. It's typical Lewis Hamilton, though, isn't it? To say, it's a bit like the tyres are dead radio calls of the past, and then popping in a fastest lap. It's just this time the car's rubbish, and then the next day just popping in pole position like it's nothing. It's what you would expect from Lewis Hamilton, the unexpected, and that's why we love watching him.
That's really interesting you say, actually, about the Martin Brundle mentioning the balance in the last two corners. And I think this is something that was playing on my mind a little bit, and I'm trying to think what was actually going on there. And I think it was a warning sign to them that they missed, particularly when they're running the high fuel. They were blaming that instability on maybe older tyres, but really, when both drivers were complaining about it, it was more probably due to the balance on the high fuel that was causing the issues. Because as we saw, as soon as the fuel load comes off, the car is behaved really well. So yeah, I don't know what to make of it, really. I think the slightly used tyres may have masked them, and then, you know, them not really understanding that, you know, it wasn't the tyres necessarily, it was perhaps a fuel load and their bias towards one lap. So, yeah, really interesting conundrum.
It's interesting that Mercedes were struggling on the high fuel because traditionally they've been better in the race than in qualifying. And you saw, like you say, Tom, at the end of the race, Lewis was catching Sergio and potentially for third place.
Adam, I just wanted to come to you. You had that flex of saying Martin Brundle's your colleague. And I was watching an interview with another one of your colleagues, and Hamilton seemed really, really grateful and shocked after quali in terms of what happened with FP 1, 2, and 3, and then what happened in quali as well.
It's not a flex. I think I can correct it. It's an honour.
It is.
He's probably the one guy that I've been starstruck by still. But yeah, look, it's been a really tough time for Lewis Hamilton, relatively speaking, let's say. Like, obviously, he lives a good life and there are those through worse times. But since Abu Dhabi 2021, he's not been able to fight back, which is what he feels he deserves to do. It's what his team feels he deserves to do. And it's almost what the world feels he deserves to do. He's the goodie in Formula One. I'm not saying that there is a bad guy I'll leave that up to I'll leave that up to people to decide, but Lewis Hamilton is the good guy, the superhero, and it's as though he lost some of his superpowers through no fault of his own after he lost a title through no fault of his own, but we won't go down there. So with all of that being added up, it'll be just relief that all this work is paying off. He's still got it. And even though I think it's fair to say if he is the greatest ever, he's one of them, still at 38, still at 38, he needs to kind of prove to himself that he is the best. So I think back to my Macker, he would need a test session before each and just to prove to himself that he could still do it. I guess this is just a reminder to himself that he's still got it. I just thought of that great radio message. One of you might be able to remember from where it came, but where he said, "Still got it, Bono, still got it." But yeah, I love that one. Can anyone remember that race? Do write in or comment if you can remember it. Because I'd like to know. I'll probably look afterwards, but yeah, it's relief, isn't it?
Yeah, you can see the relief just coming out of his face. So talking and going from car 44, let's go to car 63. Strategy error on George's side for Tom, leaving him too late and starting the race on Sunday at P18.
Yeah, to be honest, that was a really, really bad call from Mercedes there. To effectively leave their second run to the last. I can see why they've left it to the last minute, as usual. You can see why they've done it. Obviously, they've had no running on that tyre through practice. And, you know, it's because of that, they've then panicked and thought maybe track evolution is higher than we thought. So, you know, we're going to have to hold the cars back and make sure they're the last to start their laps, and then completely misjudged how the traffic would affect them. With not just George, but Lewis as well. I mean, Lewis was in real danger as well, cruising up and jockeying with, I think it was Leclerc. And we know the tyre prep is so crucial, particularly on the Mercedes, on the harder tyre, and, you know, they're struggling to get temperature in as it is at the best of times, to then have to start your flying lap without the prep, cruising at almost walking speed is just not ideal at all. And then George having to yield in the last corner to an Alpine that goes up the inside. He's running around on effectively the marbles or the dust. And then, yeah, straight away losing out 0.3 just from the exit down the straight. And then you've got to then fight turn one with dirty, cold tyres. And it's just, yeah, not really acceptable for a team of this caliber, particularly as it's not uncommon for them to start doing this now. It's happened a few occasions now from memory. But yeah, that then ruined not only today, but his race as well, unfortunately. So yeah. And also could have pulled Lewis out of his quali spot, pole position. Sorry. So yeah, another bad mark for Mercedes, unfortunately. But then again, actually, I think Lewis managed to manage it a bit better. I think he judged the gaps a bit better than George did. I think he left way too much of a gap between him and Lewis. And that's actually what's allowed everyone to go, oh, I want that space, and then they've all pushed past him. So yeah, I think if he just got on with it, followed Lewis through, he would have been okay. You know, it was a really difficult situation for both drivers.
Yes, it's a great point you make there, Tom. And if that is Ferrari, then the media storm will be Ferrari mess up again and they'll make more. Whereas the traditional thinking is that Mercedes are very sound in terms of their strategy, and they are in general. But you're right, it's happened a few times, and Lewis's experience ultimately got him out of that situation, where in Ferrari, the drivers maybe don't have quite that experience. And that, I think, is what made the difference there, because it was a nervy few minutes there, especially for someone watching it without sound on, because I was in a pub at the time. It's not the ideal experience to watch F1 in a pub with no sound, but don't you worry. When Lewis went on pole, I made sure they knew about it.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tom, you talked about tyre prep, so I want to talk about the new sort of qualify format that was used at the Hungara Ring this weekend, the alternative tyre allocation, also known as ATA. And Tom, it revealed some interesting things about the W14 and how it operates as tyres as well.
Yeah, well, not just the W14, but it was interesting to see how the whole field reacted differently to different compounds. The way that I like to think of it is it's a bit like spinning plates. Each tyre is independent, and you're spinning plates with different cars working different tyres differently. And it turns out to be quite an interesting thing to watch, to be honest. I don't know how much of that was down to not having enough tyres to run in practice. Is something that we'll touch on later, I think, with Mercedes and how they do struggle when they don't get their data that they need in practice.
They're going to have to make the show interesting in some respect, and that's why we're getting the sprint races and little tweaks here and there. And they'll make a tweak, I think, at the next trial of these three different sets of tyres in qualifying, and hopefully that just refines it a little bit, like Mercedes refine their car overnight.
So moving on to Sunday, moving on to the race, Adam, I was so excited to see Lewis Hamilton at pole position for the first time in ages, but his start wasn't so great, was it?
It wasn't, which was a bit of an issue because it just ended the race. We knew the result as soon as his start was bad. And it's really unusual for Hamilton Mercedes to have bad starts. Everyone was talking about it, and it is true. They do tend to start well. And Lewis Hamilton still got good reactions, and he did react well at the start. It's just in the second phase, it seemed that he had a little bit of wheel spin, and as a result, Verstappen was able to get up alongside him. Hamilton was forced wide by the Dutchman, and that allowed both McLarens through. And ultimately, that decided Hamilton's race, because I think that the McLarens and the Mercedes, they're very close in terms of pace. They've got different strengths. And perhaps Hamilton could have held up one or both of the McLarens if things had been different and maybe Verstappen had overtaken him like a lap later where things had come out in the wash a bit cleaner than they did for him. But the start was crucial, and the start was not what you want as a Mercedes fan.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Adam. In my opinion, it was literally, I thought, you know, Lewis is going to be leading by turn one. I had that set in my mind. I was so shocked when it didn't happen. And like Lewis was saying, he said he hit his numbers. So what he's meaning is he's released the clutch at the RPM that the engineers have told him to do, and he's followed his shifts as what was predetermined. But still, unusually, getting a very slow start in the second phase. I've also heard some negative criticism maybe about how, you know, he tried to cover the inside but maybe squeezed Verstappen for too long. Maybe should have cut back and then gone underneath Verstappen to get the exit of turn one and pull alongside. But in my opinion, in those circumstances, it's so difficult. I think you're better off to hold where you are rather than trying to chop across the track, not knowing where other cars are around you. So maybe he played it too safe, but I think experience told him that, you know, you need to stay where you are and just take the hit on the exit. Apart from that, I think he did drive a good race. He wasn't overdriving, for example, and with some good stints, but ultimately it was the start that killed it for them, I think.
The start was particularly surprising given how dirty the inside traditionally is, or the even numbered side for the Hungarian Grand Prix. And there was that stat that second place had not won the race, second place had only won the race one time around the Hungaroring for the last 12 years, Lewis Hamilton in 2016. Verstappen got great drive off second place, and that ultimately was a stat that misled us and put both Tom and I'm sure many others, into a false sense of security. I think it was clear that Verstappen was going to win. It's just it could have been a little bit more interesting how he won. But it's interesting what Toto Wolff was saying about Mercedes being the second quickest car. Zak Brown told Sky that McLaren were the second quickest car. Only one of them is right, and I'm not sure either of them fully knows. But as I was talking about, it could have been a different story had that start led to Hamilton being ahead of the McLarens. And he was coming back at Sergio Perez. So there was some pace within that Mercedes, and it appeared as though Toto was saying perhaps Lewis and Mercedes were a little bit conservative in terms of bedding those tyres in at the beginning of the final stint, and perhaps they could have got on with it and started chasing Sergio Perez a little bit more towards the end. Just a little anecdote that I know we've talked about the start, but I was in another pub in London on Sunday to watch the race. Now, usually I don't like being in pubs, as I've already established, but I had my mate down from Birmingham to visit me in London, and we were eating and drinking our way around London, as you do. And we found this place in Camden with no sound once again, but some Dutch fans came and sat on our table so they could watch the race. And I was getting so nervous. And then when Verstappen got through, they laughed, and all I could do was kiss my teeth and try not to say anything rude. That sort of noise, that's all I could do. But
you almost have to bite your lip, don't you?
I know that if Hamilton had won that race, I would have been given it large. So maybe it's a good thing he didn't win. No, it's never a good thing Lewis Hamilton losing as Mercedes fans. But yes, the point is The start made the difference. I think Mercedes and McLaren are very close, and it's going to be exciting and interesting to see in the upcoming races, the back and forth for best of the rest, as they call it.
Yeah, talking about Mercedes and McLaren, Adam, after the first round of pit stops, Hamilton actually jumped on the radio questioning how they'd fallen so far behind the McLarens. We've actually got a question from Kibi on Twitter. And Tom, if you don't mind, if you take this one. So Hamilton lost 4 seconds on his out lap and 5 seconds on the subsequent five laps. Is this to bring the tyres gently such that he can attack towards the end of the stint? Or was it that Hamilton was struggling with tyre warm-up on the hards?
Interesting. Well, I think Adam has already touched on this a little bit by saying what Toto was effectively saying by when he said that maybe they're a bit too conservative to start with. For me, looking at his lap times, I mean, he's come out the box and done a 25.8 followed by a 25.5 before then dropping 1.3 seconds down into his stint pace. So for me, that looks predetermined. It's like, you know, they've agreed that's what the lap time's going to be. If it was more tyre warm-up, I'd expect the lap times to slowly come in to where they settle. So, yeah, I think maybe they were, again, this links back to the whole them not being able to use the tyres in free practice, which really hurt them, I think. But then, yeah, both McLarens are able to come out the pits and then jump straight into the 23s and low 24s. So, yeah, for me, maybe it's a bit of both. Maybe it's a bit that you know, he was driving to a predetermined lap time. And then on top of that, it took a little while for the tyres to come in, whereas the McLaren was able to fire them up pretty quickly and then continue the pace throughout the whole stint. But yeah, I think the stint on the hard was a bit poor anyway from the Mercedes. We knew that it wasn't the tyre for them, but unfortunately, as the deg went, we couldn't use a soft, so which would have been the ideal tyre for them. But it were in terms of relative pace. So yeah, I think mainly it was a predetermined call, I think, from the team, backed up by Toto saying, you know, maybe we're a bit conservative. So I'm sure they'll go away and look at that and get on top of that quickly.
Hamilton also, Adam, had a late surge on Piastri and Perez during the end of the race.
He did, and that's what Toto Wolff was referring to as perhaps a little bit of regret that they'd not got on with it a little bit earlier, because he could well have picked up that podium place that would have given us a little bit more to smile about. And I think it was potentially possible. While Perez wasn't getting the most out of that Red Bull, Hamilton should be taking advantage and taking the podium.
Yeah, Lewis's stint on the medium was extremely impressive. And I can see why Toto's saying the second fastest car. Mainly because of the cooling issues they had with PU and brake temperatures. Obviously, Lewis is not able to drive 100%, so he's doing a bit of management in that stint as well. And this brings us back to the question as well. Despite running quite a draggy rear wing, we know their efficiency isn't quite as good as the McLaren and the Red Bull, for example. But on this circuit, even though, you know, the straights aren't long, but they're actually very similar in the speed traps, only marginally slower. I think some of that is down to the cooling and running tighter and more marginal on their cooling package to try and shed some drag. I should explain that by cooling the car, you introduce drag to the car. So you want to trim that down as much as possible. And I think they were really pushing what they could achieve in terms of reduced cooling to gain in reduced drag, and I think that led them to the overheating issues. So yeah, with that in mind, it's a very, very good stint on the medium to close off. I know they had the bias for the setup more towards low fuel, and that's became apparent as soon as the fuel burnt off. We saw great pace come back to the car, and then I think that then links back again to FP 1 and 2. And 3 as well, where limited running has masked the issue. That issue was there in broad daylight for everyone to see in FP1 and 2. In FP2 mainly, on the high fuel. And I think that they've just using the excuse of the tyres being old and only using one set of mediums in that session. They used that as an excuse why the balance was poor to the drivers, and you know, didn't really listen to them, I don't think.
I think drivability is perhaps something that could be a differentiator as Mercedes and McLaren Mercedes go head to head, because Lewis was talking about how he didn't enjoy a single lap driving that Mercedes, which is still clearly fairly quick. Whereas the McLaren drivers seem a little bit more at ease driving the car. Maybe it's because they've been driving such a rubbish car and all of a sudden it feels amazing, a little bit like George Russell jumping in the Mercedes from the Williams. I'm feeling like that was better last year. Or it could be that the drivability is better. And as a result, that could pay a circuit, certainly like Singapore later in the season, where you need to have the confidence in your car. Saying that, Hamilton can still put it all on the line, but I guess around the Hungaro ring, the barriers aren't quite as close as in other tracks, and as a result, he could afford to make those calculated risks, whereas he might not do so later on. But yeah, I'm not sure. George seemed fairly happy in his car as he came through the pack. So maybe it was just a Lewis thing, demanding even more, because that's the thing that he keeps on saying, isn't it? He's not interested in race wins. He's interested in championships, although he seemed pretty interested in that pole position on Saturday, having said all of that. Yeah, I just think that drivability is another important thing to look out for.
It's definitely one of those hot topics that we need to keep an eye on. The car looked very pacey at the end of the race, which has led Shane on Twitter to ask, the car looked better on the softs and the mediums on low fuel. So do you think our quali and sprint performance will improve for the remainder of the season, Tom?
Unfortunately not. I think, yeah, like we said earlier, that you know, the car has...
Tom, you're killing me.
Yeah, the car has been biased towards the one lap pace, maybe because they thought, you know, it's a bit difficult to overtake here. So maybe they thought, you know, one lap pace is more important, or maybe slightly more important than race pace in order to get the track position at the start of the race. But yeah, I just think it's all in the setup, unfortunately. And I could be wrong. I just hope I'm wrong. But yeah. Particularly in this type of circuit, it's really important to get the balance right, because it's effectively one corner after the other, and each corner affects the next corner. So one mistake in the corner before will then impact corners down the road. So that's why it's so important to get that balance right. And I think, yeah, it was all done for the one lap pace, unfortunately.
And let's not forget, going back to why Lewis got that pole position, Budapest is a track that has always suited him. And it's no wonder he's got pole position nine times. He's got more pole positions now at a single track than any other driver in history, which is incredible. But it's become the standard for Hamilton. And Hungary is a track probably alongside Montreal, and in more recent years, Silverstone, where Hamilton has performed consistently and done really well. And it's that one corner after another that really suits his driving style. You might be able to explain technically why that is, Tom. I don't know. But yeah, Budapest does seem to suit that Hamilton's style. And maybe that's something that kind of covered up some of the reasons for Mercedes not being quite as quick as Red Bull and McLaren this race.
It seems to be a really happy hunting ground for Hamilton at the Hungaroring. And George had a great run through from P18, beating Aston and Ferrari on pace. So Adam, a huge positive from the weekend, perhaps overshadowed by the disappointment of how far Hamilton fell behind at Red Bull.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, George was the driver of the day. I don't know why. Well, Sergio Perez was voted driver of the day for some reason. For finishing third in the fastest car, whereas George Russell, look at him, and yeah, he has good reason to be happy, and he was great in terms of strategy too, to be adaptable and make the most of what came, because he ran long, probably waiting for a safety car to happen. It didn't quite occur, but he still made the strategy work, and he got on with it, and he was making overtakes and making the race interesting, to be fair, as well, with all the overtakes he was doing. I took my friend along. It was the first time he's ever seen a Grand Prix from start to finish, bless him. It was a boring one, relatively speaking. And I don't think he'll be doing it in a hurry, but he was pleased with George Russell keeping him awake and entertained. And yeah, just what George needed after the disappointments of Saturday, which he will learn from, the team will learn from, and they can move forward. It's not a huge amount lost at the end of the day, other than maybe a couple of points, because George rectified it on Sunday with a great drive.
Yeah, for me, I was really impressed with George's drive. It was very calm and methodical, particularly into turn one, not getting carried away, sort of sitting back a little bit and watching that pile up unfold. Making advantage of that and coming out in P14, and then showing some fairly good race pace, not quite as good as Lewis, but it was up there and consistent as well. Somehow managed to make the overcut work on Alonso. Not quite sure how he did that. And then the genius move on Sainz was just, I was lost for words when I saw it. Really, really an unusual move to effectively move out of the dirty air around the outside and get the drive off the last corner. Really impressive on the spot thinking. Really, really great. I've only ever seen Lewis do something like that really at Brazil. 2021, moving offline to generate some more downforce to give you a better exit into the last corner down the straight. So yeah, really impressive. And then managing to get past both Ferraris, Leclerc with getting a bit lucky with his bad luck, getting the 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane, meaning that we're ahead of both Mercedes are ahead of the Ferrari and Aston Martins, which is important for the constructors. So yeah, I think for me, he was actually driver of the day. To be honest, I don't think Perez deserves that. George drove a stellar race.
Yeah, I think I'll have to make it 3-for-3 and make George our driver of the day. We can have our own Silver Arrows podcast driver of the day. So George Russell, if you're listening, the driver of the day is all yours for the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But covering an area we've spoken about in recent weeks, we had a really interesting question from Peter Cummins via Twitter, who asked, Tom, if you want to take this one, it's got your name all over this. So what do you think the car's strengths are now? As in Barcelona, it seemed medium to high speed. In Silverstone, it seemed low speed. Now after Hungary, I'm confused. And do Mercedes actually know themselves? So Peter Cummins, thank you for your question.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think they've effectively completely changed the philosophy of the car, really. And like we said at Silverstone, they're focusing on the slow speed, and they've done it. They've achieved what they've set out to do. They're easily the fastest in the slow speed, and even towards the medium speed as well. But yeah, it's a difficult question, because I think they do know, and I think probably the steps they've taken in the slow speed have caused issues in the high speed maybe, and they will start to focus in on the high speed maybe. But the important thing is that despite being slower in the high speed, they weren't actually losing that much time. So on the quali lap anyway, so that's all down to spending more time. More of the percentage of the lap is done in the slow speed. So so the updates they're bringing are working only in the slow speed and medium speed maybe, but it does. The front wing's doing exactly what it says on the tin. It's helping the medium speed, and I think I haven't quite put my finger on it on how they're doing it, but I think it's probably to do with how you enter a slow speed corner, you know, the car doesn't just become a slow speed. You know, you trail the brake in, and by doing that, having a more consistent ramp down in downforce, which gives the driver more confidence as you tend towards the apex. So yeah, all of these little things are helping, and I think Mercedes are being quite clever with the upgrades that they're bringing in terms of how those upgrades are going to go onto next year's car, and also I do think that maybe some of the upgrades that they had or said they had for Silverstone that they canned, I think probably they would help in the high speed but not benefit next year's car, so they've decided to scrap them. It's just a hunch. Yeah, so then bringing or scrapping the upgrades that are going to help them in the high speed but then probably impact next year's development is very clever, and I think they have the measure on Aston Martin as we stand and Ferrari. They know that McLaren are coming, but realistically they need to outscore Mercedes by 13 points every single race in order to overtake them in the championship. So I think they're just monitoring that and doing as little as possible and as much as necessary to keep ahead achieve that P2 in the constructors. Red Bull are gone. There's no chance in catching them. So I think they know, you know, we're better off focusing on next year and doing as much development as carryover as possible. I think that it's actually quite a smart way that they're approaching the situation, I think. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see next year, unfortunately.
It almost feels as though the Mercedes is an all-rounder compared to the Ferrari and Aston Martin, certainly. I'm not sure about the McLaren. We're yet to see all of what it's got in terms of all the different types of tracks. But that is what is putting them in P2 in the championship, the fact that they are consistent in if not being the second fastest car, at least the third fastest car, and in and around the podium and just operationally being sound other than in qualifying sometimes. And that is good to see that it's still there. And hopefully they take the same operational approach to developing the car so that it's stronger next year. And that's what the Red Bull is. It's an all-rounder as well to a certain extent. So hopefully that is the way to go. We know that is the way to go. That's what wins championships, having a car that is quick on any circuit on any given day. Red Bull is doing that at the moment, and Mercedes will hope that being smart, like Tom's just spoken about there, with their upgrades this year and thinking about the big picture, which is next year and 2026 with the changes there and potential chances there, that is what's going to get Lewis Hamilton or George Russell, as well as the Silver Arrows, back on top.
Progression, not perfection. So I'm hoping, yeah, in 2024 that we do have a title winning car, but hopefully George as well. But away from the track, Lewis encouraged journalists to look into how and when Red Bull lost their double DRS advantage in some fairly weighty comments implying something suspicious had gone on. Adam, you're at Sky Sports F1. Is there anything in that?
He did keep on bringing it up when he was speaking to Craig and Ted was talking about it as well. And I can only assume that he feels that the Red Bull were doing something illegal with their DRS deployment. But if he thinks that Red Bull are slowing down, I think that that's not necessarily correct, because if I'm not mistaken, they won by their biggest margin around Budapest, maybe to make a point off the back of these comments, who knows. But yeah, it feels like it's not a silly season, but it's political season in Formula One. We had it last year, starting around the Singapore Grand Prix, where there were certain claims being going around about the cost cap, and those sorts of claims are coming back round again. So maybe we can speak about that in a minute, but I don't know what Hamilton's trying to do there, but he's the biggest voice probably in the sport So if Mercedes feel that something is going on with Red Bull, then he's quite happy to be that mouthpiece for his team. So, yeah, I can't imagine that he's just come up with this on his own. Mercedes obviously feel that there's something, but I don't know what there is that there could be. Maybe Tom's got an opinion or a more informed view on this, but I don't know any more than you do.
Yeah, I've been struggling with this one, to be honest. I'm not quite sure what he's implying, mainly because I can't see Red Bull using DRS to cheat. I mean, the car's fast enough without it. So, you know, what's the point in effectively painting a great big arrow in your data to say, look, DRS is open and we're going this quickly versus when it's shut? I just can't see it being a thing that they'd cheat with. Maybe he's frustrated that the team might know that they are cheating in some way, should I say, but they just don't know what it is maybe. And you know, he's trying to get it out there as that's the most obvious performance mechanism we've seen them using. So maybe it's just a way of getting the momentum going for people to start investigating and making allegations and then trying to get to the bottom of where the pace is coming from. But yeah, I can't see the DRS being a source of cheating from Red Bull, to be honest.
It definitely seems like it was very interesting the way he was wording what he was saying to the interviews in terms of you should check this and you should check that. So yeah, I'll be interested to see what comes out. And as we're approaching the summer break, but up next is Belgium. Peter Cummins had a second question asking, what should we expect in terms of Mercedes' performance from Spa? And do you think they'll bring any significant upgrades to improve performance, Tom?
Unfortunately, they're going to need to, I think. Their aerodynamic efficiency just isn't up there with McLaren, for example. And I think, to be honest, Williams are looking like a threat to them at the moment. So yeah, they're going to have to bring something to try and boost that aerodynamic efficiency. Obviously, you've got that long camel straight. They're just going to be a sitting duck if they try and put any kind of wing on the car. So yeah, they're going to have to come up with something, unfortunately. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, you can see Mercedes going quite all right through the middle sector of Spa. It's just the second and final, the first and final sector is the big problem, and that's where you can see Red Bull pulling off and McLaren too with the updates that they have. It could well be that Williams are the third fastest car in Spa because, yeah, I'm not sure that from... Although saying that, Ferrari were quite good in Austria, so maybe they'll be ahead of Mercedes as well. It's going to need to be an update or accept that it's not going to be a good race, unfortunately. I'm agreeing with you there, Tom. But you never know. There's sometimes a little bit of inclement weather around the Ardennes forest that can spice. No, I don't like using the word spice things up, given what's gone on there recently. But change things around.
Tom, Adam, thank you so much for joining me here on the Silver Arrows podcast.
A pleasure. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much for having us.
And that's all we have time for this week. A massive thank you to Tom and Adam for joining us. Their social media handles are in the show notes. And thanks to you for listening. Do remember to follow us on Twitter at MercF1Pod and hit that follow button in your podcast app. If you're enjoying these episodes and feeling extra kind, drop us a review and share this episode with anybody you think may enjoy it. We'll see you after Belgium.